Are you recording already?
I can turn it off.
Oh, okay. Is that you?
It's Christina.
Christina, I know.
Brittany's off today and Lucy was not feeling well, so I had to do it, which is fine.
Zero breaks, right?
I know. I was at another meeting across town.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Hello.
Oh, hi, friend.
People are trying to come in. People are in the waiting room. Admit all.
There we go.
Well, isn't that a very handsome picture of Trevor?
Yeah.
It's Christina.
Yeah. You clean up real well.
Thank you.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Carlos. Here we are. We got one.
Good afternoon. How are you guys?
Hey, Trevor.
Good. It's another meeting.
Hey, Trevor. My wife says she knows you.
Uh-oh.
What's your wife's name?
She knows everybody.
Her name is Rhonda Bodfield.
Say that again?
Her name is Rhonda Bodfield. She works for TEP.
Oh, yes. We've met on a number of occasions and communicated quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice to know. I love how small Tucson is.
Yeah. Before we know,
so that's not Carlos. That's not our Murph burning, is it?
It look good.
Oops. Okay.
It look good. Go ahead. I move that we approve them.
Okay. So we'll they're accepted as written for July 14th, 2022. Any additions or corrections?
I have two small changes that I think to improve what it means. And the second page under director's report, in return, the buy blocks will be returned for use. This will allow the city to test the buy blocks and establish, I guess, if the program will be sustainable. There needs to be some other word, a vowel in there of some sort. And decide or something.
Decide.
Okay. Decide's good.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other one is on page 3, under Chairperson Yarder, shared about the vacant positions and so forth. In the last sentence, it says, it depends on enterprise at county and the transition has made it difficult to export and import the data. So it just is the idea that it has been really hard with that transition to deal with the data.
Okay, so you made a couple things more readable.
For clarity.
Yes, for clarity. Shall we go ahead? We'll accept the minutes for July 14th with additions. So I think we're ready to go. For chairperson's report, I just want to quickly touch on the workshop that 6 of us attended yesterday morning. And then I'm hoping maybe item 6 for the zero waste discussion. Maybe a few of you would want to jump in and share your views about what we did, okay? So what it was a presentation, of course, looking at Tucson Zero Waste Roadmap. And we had plenty of people attending from Environmental Services, Carlos, Pat, Christina, Brittany was there. Also, I got a chance to meet in person Fatima Luna, and she's the City of Tucson Climate and Sustainability Advisor. So usually I just see her in a Zoom. So it was nice to get an opportunity to speak to her. So we can share a little bit about how the workshop was. We had divided up into two groups, and we each had two near-term development items to look at. We looked at benefits, barriers, and concerns for those. I guess a total of four. We have a total of four, two groups. So anyways, it was just really nice to see everybody in person. It was a kumbaya moment. Okay. So let's move on to item four, director's report. Carlos, for going to go through the ES fund, cost of service, and rate design.
Sure. So I just wanted to provide you an update. I know most of you follow the mayor and council meetings, but just provide you an overview. Yeah. We did present to the council our proposed rate structure. It was reviewed as part of the September 27th meeting. Had some general discussion, some just general feedback from the council, varying from essentially, I think we need to continue to explore really the price differential between the various containers that maybe the council members see that the fee may be adequate. Some of them may be able to say it's probably too much really to take a bite at it at this time. Maybe there's any opportunity for us to really to break that proposed fee structure over maybe a broader period of time. Also, the concern was brought up that the department should have waited 10 years really to bring the rates discussion to the mix. So those are the general discussion. We're assembling pretty much a memo that would provide a response to some of the questions that some of the members of the council voiced during the meeting. We are scheduled to go back to them next Tuesday. Which is the October 18th meeting. Again, in the study session format, the intent is really just to get further direction, further clarification from the council as it relates to their interest of moving forward with the rate structure or potential moving forward with a notice of intent to publish or to increase rates. So that still needs to be determined from perspective in the timeline and if there's any policy decision really to move that forward, either prioritizing specific services or basically saying postponing that for a future time. So that's still a discussion that still needs to be had. I know some of you, so as part of the raid, there's a few members that maybe not be familiar with how we're set up, how we ourselves, how we essentially pay for some of the services, some of the cost associated with running the operation, and maybe potentially looking at some of the actual facilities like the landfill, the MRF. And so I know some of you requested maybe to have like a presentation, like a ES basic training or ES 101. So yeah. We're going to be assembling that for the next month, and then potentially maybe going in there and doing some tours. One of the goals as part of the rate design or the rate adjustment is ensuring that we essentially keep as many of the positions fully filled. Today we have eight vacant positions. Three of them essentially are being folks are being brought in, so that brings it down to five vacant positions. But when you look at it, is four of those positions, four out of the five, have been recreated as part of the budget process in fiscal year 23. So we're not that bad, but I think it's really important for us really to make sure that and probably the reason for that is because as part of the compensation matrix, and the adjustments that have been made to be able to make some market adjustments really allowed us really to bring folks on board, not at the starting level of the range of the ESCR range, but a little bit higher that commensurate to their experience, which has enabled us really to not only retain but also attract some new folks. So we'll try to cover that as part of that that presentation. But it's really critical for us really to make sure that we stay up to the market, not only in terms of attracting new employees and be able to provide the service, but also another key component of that is really the equipment replacement and also the capital outlay as well. So we'll try to essentially provide a macro overview of the operation and really maybe emphasize more in terms of the background of the need of adjustments. So that's
what are the positions, excuse me for interrupting you. What are the positions that you're, the three that are being brought in and the five new ones, are they some of the support positions we've talked about before or some of the leads for some of the programs that have been added?
Ms. Margo, quite frankly, no. It really, those are ESEO positions at this point in time, just equipment operators. And really, it's really just the interest of ensuring that we got adequate folks really to continue to provide that service. We still continue to be limited in terms of our recruitment capacity. So our focus is really make sure that we have folks on the ground rather than really to bring a lot of folks pretty much that provide that support. Ideally, we still need that. And we have those vacant positions. But again, the focus from my end is really make sure that we have inadequate coverage on the field to provide the service. And as we're moving along with really going out there and doing a lot of those homeless cleanups, we got to make sure that we have those resources to be able to do that. So that has been essentially the focus on recruiting for those positions.
When are you going to focus on getting someone full-time in charge of recycling or waste diversion and full-time in charge of gas to energy, et cetera, et cetera?
So I think that the next step is, I think with where we at and what I just gave you some numbers, I think that gives us an ability really to move forward and start recruiting for some other additional positions. The other pinch point that we have are the SHEMS, the heavy equipment operator mechanics. So we're gonna concentrate a little bit on that. And probably after that, then we're gonna start looking at some of those support positions to manage the other programs. But as we all know, change, but that's really where we're at today is that's the game plan moving forward.
So Carlos, just to be clear, you guys are working on a response to the city council for their clarification, and that's going to be presented on Tuesday.
Yes.
Okay.
And then Brittany sent us the link. The documents and everything. So listen in. I think I always learn a lot from listening in at the study sessions. Sometimes I cheat and wait till the study session's all almost over and I just rewind it to what I want to listen. So.
But the rate one is on the regular session. I just looked it up.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, the rate. It's a structure and it's only setting the public hearing for December.
So there's two components to that. There's a component of the study session. Okay. And there's also in terms of the consent agenda, really to move forward with the notice of on the regular agenda, really to, if the council may be interested in moving forward with the notice, it with posting the notice of intent to raise rates.
Okay. Right. Okay. I didn't see it on the study session agenda, but I'll look more carefully. I saw two others that ES had, but not that one.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any more questions for Carlos?
I was going to pick up on one thing that you said, Carlos, about the pay to throw. We talked about that yesterday at the workshop, and it came out very low. And I was trying to find where exactly it showed it, but I seem to remember that it was a fairly big group that would want at least a $10 differential to go to the smaller can, that the $1 to $3 differential wasn't going to make much difference to them in making that choice. And I know that in some of our discussions, the group, the people were worried that they would take the smaller can so it would be cheaper. And then when they filled that up, they would just throw everything else into recycling. So I don't know how that's going to come in the council, but I think that differential in what people would need, that was in one of the surveys and we mentioned, because I think that's really critical.
Right. And that's their recommendation. It has to be, if we really want to provide that incentive, it has to be anywhere between $5 to $10 spread between one container and the other. Okay. But again, keep in mind is when you look at some of those cities, you look at the spread in terms of what the cost of the service is, and it ranges between $40 to $60 or $70. So they're able to have essentially that in there as compared to us. Our gap is, our rates are significantly lower than that. So really providing that spread, it makes it a little more difficult. I think as we move down the road and we start looking at essentially deploying a lot of the infrastructure and a lot of the investments, that it certainly will give us essentially the leverage to be able to say, you know what, if this is what it really costs us really to manage and process your waste. So this is where the pay-as-you-throw component will be a good way to infuse that in there and really reduce that or increase that spread, and also reduce the waste generation as well. So our concern is would be that by increasing the rate, that the waste doesn't stop. It still is going to be generated. So what happens with that waste, whether we put it on the bin, if it's smaller, or we're going to put it in recycling, or you go somewhere else. And so that's why we got to be a little bit more smart in terms of how we need to approach that. Because at the end of the day, by virtue of increasing the rate, that doesn't mean the trash goes away either.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that was just shocking in the executive summary is that our waste diversion is only about 4%. That is so low. I mean, it's just kind of staggering.
But again, we got to keep in mind how we calculate that.
Okay. Well, sure. Okay. But that was how the HDR has calculated it. What would you take out then and say, well, it's only out of the residential collection, or would you say it's only out of the commercial? Or
so it's really, so in those terms, at 4% is, if we know we're taking 700,000 tons of waste to Los Reales every year, and we're only diverting 20,000 tons, that's essentially the percentage. Okay, yeah. But when we start, and that's where the percentage is so low, once we start looking at the waste that we can control, that waste diversion number, it's a little bit higher. So one of the things that we got to look at as we embark on the zero waste roadmap is, what are some of the things that the city can control? And so one is the residential collection, the brush and bulky program. So we can say that we're achieving that goal on the waste that we control. There's a lot of waste that comes outside the city that we really don't have any control. But I think on that is what can we do? What improvements or what facility improvements can we make really to make sure that we're diverting and we're maximizing that diversion rate of other waste that comes into the landfill? So that would include not only unincorporated areas, but also your construction debris, your landscape material that goes into the landfill, that it all in the self hauler, that all those tonnages really come into play. And so how do we manage that? And what do we set up really to best manage that waste coming in?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much you can do about Republic, I guess, you know, and other companies that use the landfill for disposal. I don't know what legally you can require them to do, or else they'll just go off and start their own. I guess it would seem to me a little more encouraging to have the report make the percent diversion what we control rather than the total going into the landfill, though I suppose from a 30,000 foot view, we have to look at what goes into the landfill, but it's pretty discouraging to think we're only at 4% of the total going into the landfill.
Okay, any more questions for Carlos? Otherwise, I think we need to move on to item 5 for the plastic collections pilot. And I see that Steve's here, Nadia's here. I don't know, is Aurelia with you also, Steve?
If who is with me?
I see another name, Aurelia.
Oh, no, that is.
Oh, at someone else? Okay.
Yeah, so Nadia just asked me to jump in here real quick and share a bit of an update. It's actually a very good segue because I went through that agenda material as well and read through that zero waste report, and there was not a single mention of plastic diversion in that report. So I was pretty pissed off after reading it because it's something that we are putting, and that's not pissed off at Carlos's team because they didn't create the report. But it's something that we are putting an immense amount of time into every single day at the office, and it has a tremendous upside potential to it. Just as I'll give you the 30,000 foot view of it, when I started this on August the 1st, we presented this as a pilot program. We were going to run through the end of the year to see a couple of things. Number one, is the community interested? And number two, if the answer to that is yes, what's the pace at which this stuff is going to accumulate? What do we do with it? Who's going to manage it? And what are the logistics behind how we do that management? We've already answered the first question: is the community interested in it? We have right now sent. First to tell you, the players are of course Carlos's team, who is very supportive of us right now. They are carrying the burden of transporting the roll-off that we have behind the ward office out to Jason Tankersley's place out on the east side. He is another one of the players. So there's a cost for that transport. Jason is allowing us to store the stuff out there until we have enough to fill a semi with, which we did last week. And so he is bailing it. And then the third partner is Bifusion over in Gardena, California. They're the ones who make the blocker and have the patent on that. And they're the ones who are receiving and processing the material once we send it over. So they received a shipment from us a couple of days ago. Since August 1st, we have, the community has brought over 15 tons of plastic just to this one location. That 15 tons is 15 tons of bubble wrap and, you know, candy wrappers and, you know, that kind of thing. It's not 15 tons of concrete. We filled up the, we filled the 30 cubic yard roll-off up now, have three different pickups a week. It started out as one. Now we're doing it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And the reason for that is because it's jam-packed. And if you've come over here on the weekend, by Sunday, you're seeing it stacked up on the back by the back door. And so the thing's nearly half full on Monday after they take it over for the roll-off. So people are totally in on this. The comments that we hear from people walking in the door are finally, and you know, this is really great. We're so happy to have something to do with these non-recyclable plastics, because it's just, people just don't want to see it wind up in the landfill. Two of the partners that we've got on board right now, the zoo is participating. Tohono O'Chul was, I met with them yesterday. They're going to start collecting stuff and sending it over. The Assistance League is on board. All of the clothing that they get in is new. And so they're all in, you know, plastic wrappers. There's a friendly competition going on now between University High and Oro Valley Basis School. And those are the real ambassadors. I spoke at UHS a few weeks ago, and they had four different classes in their auditorium, and brought over probably 150 gallons in the plastic bags of recyclable of plastics that they had brought from home, and they saw how easy it was to accumulate this stuff. I've spoken to the university. We're in that conversation. And actually three different pieces. Number one is the university is going to partner with me in a project of using the blocks to build an enclosure for a surface transportation parking lot just off campus. I've offered to pay for the blocks if they pay for the wrought iron that they're going to also use. In addition to that, the university is thinking about locating a space on campus, probably over by Ring Road, where they would collect on campus. And got a meeting, I think it's on Monday, with the head of the student union, who I'm absolutely certain could fill up a 30 cubic yard roll-off in a weekend just from the material they get from the food court. I know from my experience that they could do it after every football game. So that's a partnership that that we're just beginning. And I met the sustainability office. It's a student group, and they're going to be in the meeting that we have next week with the manager of the student union. So that's a partnership. The university certainly has a role. And when I met with their facilities director, Chris Kopak, he was completely stoked by the idea. And because they recognize the importance and the value of it. So that's a partnership. We have another group in town called Polyprint. Polyprint makes the plastic labels that go around bottles, plastic water bottles, the Diet Coke bottles, they make the packaging for potato chip bags and that kind of thing. Their process is that they roll the plastic labels on a big, like about a 5 foot in diameter roll, and they layer the ink in on one pass of time. If the ink smudges, it constitutes waste, and so they have to flag that and pull it off the line. I have been out there several times. They generate, without exaggeration, because I've seen their numbers, roughly 100,000 pounds of non-recyclable plastic every month. Every month out of one facility. That is another relationship that we're generating. I've been out there a couple of times, pickup truck. Right now, Republic is servicing that facility, and they're just dumping it in because it's non-recyclable. And so that is added into the quantity that Carlos is mentioning that's winding up in the landfill. I want to divert that. It's something that they are charging Polyprint a hauling and a tipping fee for. And a compacting fee. It is non-recyclable. It does not affect our contractual relationship with Republic. If Polyprint chooses to do something more environmentally sensitive with it, which is to say, send it to Tankersley instead of sending it to the landfill. So that's a conversation we're having. I've got a meeting coming up with Raytheon. They also produce a significant quantity of this stuff. I don't have the pounds but I know from having early conversations that it's going to be in the magnitude of something similar to Polyprint. So from the standpoint of product, no problem. From the standpoint of parts, we've got the partners. So where we are now is that a couple of weeks ago, I had a meeting with Carlos and his team. Mike Ortega was involved in it. Bifusion was there. Jason Tankersley was there, and probably somebody else that I'm forgetting. But the conversation is this: what's the city's role? Where do we store this stuff? We have to get a blocker into Tucson because the transportation costs are ridiculous to roll. 20 tons of plastic to Gardena, California, and then roll 20 tons of blocks back to us. So where's the blocker going to go? City's role is not going to be managing and operating this program because we're not in the business of constructing and marketing construction material. That's what the blocks do. So we will have some sort of a logistics role, the pickup, the drop off, and transportation locally. Bifusion will have a role probably in terms of either donating or lease purchasing the blocker machine. There will be jobs involved, hiring people to manage it, to operate it. They will then be marketing the blocks to the local construction industry and to residential people. I have people literally every day coming into the office saying, I want to build a fence in the backyard, or I want to build a Ramada, or whatever. And so we're working with Bifusion on that. So Bifusion would have a partner, a presence locally with the machine. Probably Jason Tankersley. He is in the process of moving one of his sites. And so he would have room on his existing site to either host the machine or probably host the machine and take the waste that we haul over to him. What are the logistics look like? Where are the drop-off points going to be? What's it going to cost? The people who want to participate in it, how is BioFusion's role here locally going to be? So we're in the middle, I'd say the front end of that conversation. What we have done though is demonstrated that running this as a pilot through the first of the year is not necessary. We've already made the community has already made the point that they want a place to get rid of these non-recyclable plastics. And we have a use form, a productive use form that people want to participate in. So our job now is to figure out how to make that happen. So that's sort of a 30,000 foot overview. I don't know, Nadia, did I skip anything or that was really salient?
Oh, you're good.
And Steve, you give updates in your newsletter. So, if members here don't have the Ward 6 sign up for the newsletter, you can go ahead and do that. There's also another site. I forget where you, is it a pledge? And
well, yeah. So BioFusion, we can, Nadia, can you put the link to the newsletter and to the site? Actually, if you just put the newsletter and I put the link to the site. And so what Chris is talking about is BioFusion offers a monthly update on what's going on. I do the newsletter weekly. The value of getting BioFusion's update monthly is that they're also throwing some other snippets in. One example is they gave an update on a nonprofit that they're partnered with called Ocean Voyage Inc. I'm pretty sure it's Ocean Voyage Inc. It's a nonprofit that goes out into the Pacific and does dredging for plastic. And in a 45-day tour that Ocean Voyage did a month or so ago, they came back with 96 tons of plastic out of the ocean, out of the Pacific Ocean. It's things like the twine that gets left behind from fishing boats. It's things that people just throw overboard. And 96 tons in 45 days. And that's a small percentage of what we as a culture are polluting the Pacific Ocean with. We've made Southeast Asia waste dump of plastics, and that's largely since China stopped taking the stuff. And that's really when the world shifted on its axis, and we had to come up with better ways to manage this stuff. So that's where we're headed.
Do you have any questions?
So Steve, I was interested that you were thinking about putting the buy block or the blocker, as you called it, over at Tankersley when we're looking at turning Los Reales into a sustainability campus, in which there would be places where companies can be built that would be using materials, waste, quote unquote, waste materials as their input. Is that a consideration to put it there?
Yeah, everything is a consideration right now. And I know that we've got those 7 or 8 or 9 shovel pads that are being built out there. I will tell you, and this is not news to anybody and certainly not news to Carlos, that Republic has not been a willing partner in this. They have a contract probably 6 months ago, if I invited a meeting and included them. And with the expectation, naive as it turns out, that they would want to be a willing player in this. Their perspective is that to the extent that people are opting into this program and putting the ones and twos into the bags that we are affecting their bottom line, their attitude was checkbook out, and because you're impacting our contract. So whenever I speak publicly about it, my message is non-recyclable plastics, but I promise you, I'm not dumpster diving out in that roll off and picking out the ones and twos and sending them and putting them in a blue bin. If people want to put them in there, knock yourself out. But yeah, I mean, so we have all options are on the table. And I mentioned Jason Tankersley because he's pretty excited about this, and he's doing the stuff anyway, and he's expanding uh-huh. his operation. But yeah, that Los Reales is a possibility too.
Do we know how much the blocks cost with the current transportation involved?
Well, so the transportation is roughly $100 per pallet, per bale, I mean. Okay. It's not cost effective. The blocks cost about $1.90 each. That's the same, roughly the same as cinder blocks. So they're very cost competitive. The differences are these. The way they make sense from an economic standpoint are three. Number one is there's no mortar involved. So there's no concrete. The labor involved is significantly less. This group could go out and they stack like Legos. They literally stack like Legos. And so you would put a piece of threaded rod at each end of the block and just put, you know, cinch them together with a nut at each end and you're done. So the construction time is significantly reduced, and you don't need to go out and hire a skilled mason to do the laying. And so there are significant cost benefits to the process of laying the equipment. Right now, right this very second, they are, I believe, Carlos, right, they're going vertical with the trash enclosure out at El Pueblo Community Center. And we just put four benches in over at Himmel Park a couple of weeks ago, another one out of San Gabriel. I've connected to a Ramada at a dog park out in McCormick Park. We're doing several of these around town. I mentioned the project out at the U of A. Polyprint wants us to build something out at their place. Tankersley, one of the things that he's doing is he builds, his primary thing is composting. And so he's building community gardens out in a lot of the TOSD schools. And these are perfect for raised planter beds. So there's a boatload of uses for them. And the city of Flagstaff just permitted a 600 square foot, two bedroom, one bath house out of the things. And so we're really, you know, I'm talking to somebody else about maybe some tiny homes. The R value is superior to cinder block. They've been tested for compaction. The shear strength and something else that I can't remember right now. I had a brain cramp. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, it's a very easy product to work with. The other thing that I forgot to mention is that we are working with Bifusion on some do-it-yourself kits too. People come in all the time and say, "How can I build a bench in my backyard?" Or pick your thing. And the do-it-yourself kits would be order a 6-foot bench or order an 8-foot by 5-foot wall for your back. And Bifusion would then palletize the materials, including the steel rods and the nuts and all that, and send you the DIY kit. And so that's something else we're working on as well.
So Steve, go ahead.
Thanks, Mike. This is Yolanda. I had asked how much water this takes, and it's my understanding it takes quite a good amount of water to create these blocks.
No. They're made by steam and compression. The blocker is all self-contained. It takes virtually none, and the self-contained process means that you're losing very, very little. That's just especially not correct.
Okay, thanks for that clarification.
Okay, Steve, my question, and you may have answered it, I may have missed it, is how have these been tested for our Arizona heat? I mean, are they going to mm-hmm. disintegrate over time?
If you go online to their website, there's a spec sheet, and what they say is that they've been tested and they're not recommended for climates where the temperature exceeds 140 degrees Fahrenheit. So I think we're good there.
Barely. Okay,
so good. Okay.
Anything else?
Questions?
Well, we appreciate your interest. And for those of you who are participating, we appreciate you helping to fill this up. I know it gives Carlos hives because it's costing him money to tram this thing out to Tankersley's now three times a week. But it's a fun project. The other thing, to Mike's point about the heat, and I forgot also to Trevor's point, that it was also thermal, they're thermal tested. And so there, it's got a B rating from a fire standpoint. But what you can do is you clad them either with stucco, and Carlos schooled me in stuccoing when we were putting the San Gabriel one in. I'm going to tell you, he used the wet stucco and then gave me a dried out bucket and said, here, you try it. And it was falling off. So he totally set me up. I will take that to my grave. But you stucco it, you paint on it, you can drill sheetrock into it. So you can do anything with it that you can do with cinder block.
And there's lots of pictures on your site.
Yep.
Board six.
More to come.
Yeah.
I actually, I have a question, if that's all right. I was just wondering, so I know we kind of touched on this, but what's the future of this project? Like, are there other wards that are interested in doing this? Because I know in Ward 1, I would like to see maybe like how it would look in other communities or in other parts of town, or what do the constituency that like are participating, are, is it mostly Ward 6 or is it sort of like everyone from all over the city?
It's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. One of the other values of signing up on the Bifusion link is that a part of that sign up is they ask you to put your zip code in. We've been tracking those zip codes. Right now we have roughly 1,300 people who have signed up, and they represent every single zip code in the region, every single one of them. It's not like we have just a black hole out here on the northwest side or something. Everybody in the region is participating in this. I've had people drive in, like I mentioned, from Moro Valley. People have driven up from Green Valley. There was a guy who drove down from Phoenix and asked me, can we set this up in Phoenix? And I've still got his contact information. It's a bridge too far for me right now. But we have people all over the community who are doing this. What does the future look like? That's the conversation. That's exactly the conversation we're having. I promise you, if you stood outside the office for 5 minutes, you'd have two or three cars drive by and drop stuff off. People are coming over here constantly every single day of the week. And so it's not fair to the community of one drop-off site for the region. The other side of that, though, is that right now we have 21 pickup sites for glass, and there's a cost in that for Carlos's team. There's a labor effort involved in that for Carlos's team. And so we have to be mindful of that. There is a conversation that that needs to be had about what does curbside look like. Would people buy into that and buy in the literal sense? So that, you know, that could be another route for people to opt into the program. So we don't have that exact answer yet. What we do know is that everybody in the region is signed. I mean, every zip code in the region is reflected in the people participating in this.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy day. So,
not a problem.
We appreciate you taking this on like you did with glass. So,
yeah. And kind of as a tagline, if you go look at any of the benches, drive by Himmel Park, they're in the playground of the library. The bench top is made with the crushed glass. And his name is Anita Goodrich. She runs a local company called Bottle Rocket. And Anita and I have spent hours in the garage crushing glass. And she makes countertops, and in this case, the seat tops for this. And so it's a pretty cool story that the benches are made with the reusable plastic, and the bench top is made with the crushed glass. And, you know, that's kind of Tucson.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Bye. Take care.
Okay. Let's see, how are we doing for time? I mentioned that we could do a short little discussion for item 6.0 waste. Would we want to wait till after the finance report and subcommittee report? Can we do that?
Okay.
Kind of, let's just, so we can stay on time for everything. Well, okay, so let's move to item 7, monthly finance report, Carlos.
I can go through that fairly quickly. Okay. Some of you pointed out that the issues that we are having with Workday, the transition from our past program to the new current program, we still, we provided you the report as of the August 31st of 2022. Still that report is not really the best report, because there's still some things that they have bundled, still some of the cost salaries into specific areas. We still need to continue to essentially to dissect and break away some of those costs. So it's really not a true accurate report per se, in terms of how it's essentially is broken down. But the overall figures or dollars are essentially are in the ballpark. So if you look at on page one of the report, do you want to spring it up or can I just review it?
Go ahead, because then Christina doesn't have to, or it's up to you.
Okay. So I'm assuming you have a copy of it. And so just I'll do a overview of that. So from a revenue perspective, we're on track. We're roughly about from all the revenues we're there. One of the things that we're seeing, that we're going to see a lot of activity on self-haulers, still bringing a lot of material to Los Reales. So that's still, we should be somewhere around revenue about 16%. And we're seeing about 26% budget versus actual. So we're seeing quite a bit of activity there. Everything else is stable. One of the things that we're seeing a drop, as you know, we have a fund balance. We essentially put it in the market really to gain a better interest. This last month, we saw a hit of roughly a loss to that, to that fund or to that activity, to the tune of almost $384,000. Okay, so what's being reflected, you'll see in the report, $96,000 in a negative, but in reality, there's some pluses that were part of that, but that's a net figure of the $96,000, but in a sense, we lost $384,000 because of really how we're investing the city's money. So obviously we continue to be concerned about that, but just like everything else in stock market, things go up and go down. And so this is really the nature of where we at today. If we look at page number 2, one of the things that, again, where we need to be at, one of the things that we're facing today, and again, as part of what's going on in the world, is we projected when we adopt budget of about a 48 cents dollar or gas, gallon gas equivalent, okay? And so the GG, and so that's what we projected, 48 cents. We're actually seeing that the cost of that GGE, which is how much we pay for a CNG gas, is going to basically $1.04. So that's 117% increase that we're seeing today, at least what was being programmed, even with our futures, with the brokers. That's what we're seeing today in terms of the projection of those costs. Hopefully we can leverage that as we move forward, but that's certainly a concern to us. So if you look at in terms of what we budgeted for CNG versus where we think may be at, if these costs continue to be at where they're at today, we're probably seeing an increase of about $1.6 to $1.7 million. So that's a net hit, okay? So just wanna make you aware that may be essentially coming our way. Hopefully we don't get to that point, might be a function of that. That's pretty much on the overview of the finances. In terms of really, you look at now, you look at page number 4, which outlines the capital projects. Most of those projects are ongoing or in progress. The one that we're haven't really moved forward with that as of yet is the Los Reales Northeast Urban Landscape. We are in the planning stages on that. As you know, we applied for a grant. We didn't get the money or we didn't get the grant. So we're starting from scratch on that, on trying to essentially regroup ourselves, assemble our thoughts, work with the developer next door so that we can, we know when he's gonna be paving the road, so that we can essentially pull the utilities, extend the utilities to serve our paths and our future MRF that we're proposing to construct out there. We did get a proposal for the relocation of the welding operations from the container maintenance facility to the Topsy relocation. We're in the process of issuing the notice to proceed for that design and that planning process. Los Reales HHW facility is ongoing. It's in progress. The Los Reales gas to energy project is out to bid. We actually have a pre-proposal conference scheduled for next Wednesday. So hopefully we'll get some good participants there. I don't foresee any activities, at least this year, in terms of the Congress landfill excavation project. There was some possible improvements in the area, landscaping, sidewalks and things like that. Vice Mayor Santa Cruz says, let's hold off on that. There's really no need for us to start looking into that at this point in time. So that's a little bit on hold. So that's something that we're not really moving that forward. We did complete the third CNG compressor. So that's all completed. The other project that is out, that it's out bid, is the Los Reales Cell 4B. So we got the stuff in the works to be in, being bidded out. And so we're expecting bids to be due middle of November, end of November. So hopefully we'll get some good numbers out of that. Last page, code enforcement. I know there's always a lot of discussion in terms of the vacancies that we got. So today, as of today, we have 3 vacant positions and we have 14 assigned positions. So that it really equates to a 20% vacancy rate in that shop. It does include those 14 positions, does include 2 additional positions that were essentially assigned to us. But again, today we have 3 vacant positions that we need to fill. We ran the recruitment not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago. We had 6 applicants. And unfortunately, out of those applicants, none of them met the minimum qualifications, so they couldn't move forward with the selection process. So we're going to run the recruitment again and see if we have some candidates for that. So that's my summary on the financial plan.
Any questions? Nope. Okay.
Thank you.
Moving on. All right. Did we have any other numbers to look at? Or was this this one that we got sent? Did you
working capital fund?
Working capital.
That, we covered that last time, and so I just provided the printout. I know Mr. Harrier asked for it last time, just to be able to get a good idea of what the fund looked like. So it gives you, is almost like a balance sheet. It gives you what the balances that we have today. So what are some of the current liabilities, and then how that essentially fund is broken down into 3 main components would be the landfill closure and post-closure. So right now we have in the bank $62 million. And essentially once we take the liabilities, and it brings it back to about $58.9 million. Then you take $14.9 million out of that, and that is really assigned to the landfill closure and post-closure. Then we look at what do we assign for capital projects, $18.8 million. Just keep it in mind that if we move forward with L4B, that project is gonna cost us roughly anywhere between $6 to $7 million. So that's really gonna draw down that reserve from 18 to probably 11 or 12 $1 million. Then the other component of that is the groundwater protection fee of about $11 million, 11.6. We have the fuel reserves of 1.2, gives us essentially at the end of the day, once we deduct those figures, about $12.3 million is what we call working capital, operating reserve, which equates to about 80 days of operating expenses. So again, the rate structure we're proposing is really how can we replenish the capital improvement fund? So it gives us more an ability to do a lot of the things we want to do. A lot of the programs that like the one that Councilor discussed is going to require some capital, is going to require some seed money. And so those are the things that we want to make sure that we're equipped to be able to do that.
Carlos, I appreciate. I didn't know if I was still on mute. I appreciate the breakdown because that's what I was looking for.
Yeah. Good. Any questions? Nope. Okay, let me get back to the agenda. Let's move on to item 8, subcommittee reports. And Margot, you're up for waste diversion collections and education.
All right. Excuse me. We met on October 5th with a quorum of 2. We're working to see how we can adjust the meeting so that Yolanda can join us again. We went over the MRF report, which in the future you will get automatically. I point out that we have an increase in average daily tons of 19% to a monthly total of $2,317.87 tons. This results in a slight increase in revenue from sales of about $4,800. Paper materials dropped in value, as did aluminum and HDPE, pigmented bottles. The rest of the commodities stayed the same. The result was an increase to the payment of the MRF of $32,650. That was the increase. So the number we had to pay them was $88,000, which was an increase of 58%. So you can see that's going in the wrong direction. Even though we had increased materials coming in, a few increases, not many decreases, but this is this problem of how we're figuring out what we're paying. And again, the proposed city amendments for the remaining 5 years of the lease, I understand, were presented to Republic and the city is awaiting their reply. So they were not received with a great enthusiasm, I understand. We discussed the problem of the single call center for water and environmental services. As you may know, when you call that number, you get a group that is covering both departments. ES's reputation as a competent, get it done that organization is now suffering from the long waits for the call answering. We used to pride ourselves on answering in 20 seconds with your work order done in a minute or less. And now it's very slow, sometimes 10 minutes, sometimes wrong answers are given to ES customers, delay in the work order generation, and such kinds of services really drive away our commercial customers who don't want to wait the time for their call to be answered. Until there's a change in policy at the city manager's level about this combined call center, and we get our own call center back, there isn't much we can do about it. However, the Tucson Water and ES administrators are meeting about it to try to see what they can do to improve the services or what more education or whatever the problem is.
Who makes the final decision on that? Who would make the decision to give it
Carlos?
Back. Yes.
I'll let you answer that, but my feeling is it's the city manager, but it's
going to be Mr. Ortega.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was his idea. He had this one city idea that everyone was in one city. He tried consolidating a lot of things. Not all of them have worked. The neighborhood associations are allowed 2 roll-offs for a year for community cleanups. Right now, we're scheduled out for the rest of the year. There's a shortage of operators and equipment personnel to get the roll-offs off and picked up. As you just heard earlier, when Carlos was talking about the focus for new people, it was on these equipment operators. And apparently this is one of the places where it is hindering services, that it's taking very long to get roll-offs to people. And we do charge for them, and there's a cost for them, so that's money too. Tucson Environmental Services did very well in the annual SWANA Road EO, and SWANA is Solid Waste Association of North America. It's the professional organization for all the people involved in solid waste management. They have each year a competition statewide for drivers and equipment operators. And I understand that we took first place in the landfill operator and third place for the residential. So this really goes back a long ways when Tommy Price first started operations, and that's why it's called the Tommy Price Center. He would once a year have all the trucks cleaned up and in a line down at the community center, and all the drivers would stand beside their trucks, and all the families were invited to come and see where dad, husband, brother, et cetera, worked. And it was a big kind of event. And now it's, it goes, and they did, you know, showed off how they could, their driving skills around pylons and pick things up and drop them off and so forth. And now it's part of this actual professional organization. And there's a chance that we may get the international SWANA here at some point, which would be really cool. And I hope next time we get, they tell us when it is, because it's fun to go down and to watch and to see what's going on. Plus which they usually have a really interesting vendors area, and you can see all the materials that I got to drive one of those little things that was the vacuum cleaner. You run around, you know, and vacuum up the side of the sidewalks and stuff like that. So sometimes they let some of us do those things. All right. November 5th, Saturday, is Zero Waste Day, and it's being held at the Catalina Methodist Church on Speedway. Many organizations will be there to take stuff, but the focus really is on to let the public know the opportunities for waste diversion year around. So to introduce them to organizations they may not be know about, and have them all in one place. And so I think this is the second time we're doing it. It was a big success last year. So I'm hoping that the traffic flow goes well around it. There'll also be a Boo Bash at Lincoln Park on October 22nd, where Environmental Services will have a presence. They'll also be at Cyclovia and the Family Festival in the Park. Christina reported that speaking events are picking up, so she's being asked to come and give more presentations as people are coming back to doing things in person. Christina is working on composting with the Compost Cats to have some community meetings. So they're looking to get a grant to get perhaps compost tumblers. And these would go to a household, which would be assigned like the trash bins are. People could make their own compost, so the material would stay out of the landfill, and then they can use it on in their own gardens. And the idea is that there would probably be less contamination if it's your own stuff, that you would try to keep the glass out. And I think we've heard that there's sometimes the commercial, the compost thing that we're doing, that picking up things from stores and restaurants, sometimes there is some contamination that goes into that.
Of course, they've got Compost Cats have Zudu now.
Yes, yes. So I'll do that in the landfill report. Yeah. The homeless protocol is out. And I don't know if any of you noticed the newspaper article, but it's on Sunday, which talked about it at length and how the different pieces are divided up for it, because it is a complex issue. And so ES will only do the cleanup of what is left behind after the people are moved out of the camps. And also Carlos mentioned that that's where some of the personnel were going to go. And we've seen the number of camps are around the town. So we know that it's a big cleanup job and it requires a lot of people to do that. And before they were sort of taking people from other places, and now it will have its own committed group to do that. We went over food trucks and code enforcement. Mobile food vendors, as they're actually known, are regulated by state law. They're generally on private property. If they operate day after day, then they do need a peddler's license from the city. There can be no generators or leaving behind items like frames for awnings and so forth. And signage is limited. Where there's a large group that meets regularly, then they need to get a site development plan from the city or the county, if you're in the county, that meets the zoning requirements. Then they wouldn't need a peddler license to be on that, but probably they would have to rent the space from the people who made this site plan to handle a whole series of food trucks on a private property. And apparently there is one now under development down on the south side. Remember, Chris, where what the street was on? Was it Aho and something? I don't remember.
No, I know there's a business that's trying to get together at Pantano and 22nd. Right now they're trying to satisfy code enforcement. So
okay.
That's a large one, but I've never been down to the other one.
The other one, okay.
Yolanda, do you know?
The internal.
Well, I was just going to say we have so many of them down here. It just throw a corner in it, and there's you've got one. Okay. So that was one of the reasons we were having this discussion on the food truck. It's the because we were told that not enough people are complaining. Well, I'm here to tell you I'm complaining.
Okay.
So maybe we can do something about it.
Yeah. And if a developer is moving forward with seeing that as a use of their property, it's an interesting, I think that's an interesting development. So you now have a whole cluster of them. Be interesting to see how they arrange them on the land. The internal audit report is still not completed. They hope to get it out on the 31st of October. And that was on code enforcement. How is it operating? How should it be operating? And do they need more additional resources? Hopefully they'll come out and say they need lots more resources, but we'll see what happens.
Hope so.
Frank Panias reported that there's really no change to the landfill. We heard a little bit about cell 4B. The pond has to be removed, and they thought about putting all the contaminated water. The pond is used for stormwater. Anything that falls on the landfill has to be held on the landfill and cannot be allowed to run off the property. They were going thought about using a tank, but it turned out to be too expensive. So they're going to get a new larger pond somewhere, and they're still working on that. Cell 4A, which is the current one, now has actually two working faces. The commercial face is at the bottom and the self-haulers go up to the top. So they've been separated that way. The household hazardous waste buildings are not finished yet. And the good news is that we received the permit for adding Zudu and horse manure to composting, which should heat it up and speed it up. Larger nitrogen source. And so, as I mentioned, though we normally meet the first Wednesday of the month, we're talking about moving to Thursday because that seems to fit Yolanda's schedule better, but we'll be back in touch as we get that set up. Any questions?
Thank you, Margo.
Yeah, thanks, Margo. You always do a good job.
Well, there's lots to cover. If I don't write it down, yeah, I'll forget something for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to zero waste.
Yeah, let's go back to item six, the zero waste discussion. Margo, you can add to this a little bit because we divided up into two groups, and I was in a group that looked at the incentivized reduced disposal, pay-as-you-go. And then also we looked at brush and bulky collection, and we talked about the benefits, the barriers and concerns. I can just briefly say something about the B&B, and then if someone else from the group wants to jump in and talk about the other one. Of course the benefits is to keep our neighborhoods clean. But there were problems that were discussed about people not always being able to get things to the curb. So, you know, you could have elderly people or people with some disabilities that would certainly have trouble dragging a sofa out to the curb for B&B pickup. So we talked about these people need some help. We don't know where to get it yet, but just something to think about. Let's see. Well, lack of education still with residents, knowing what they can put out, how much they can put out. I know sometimes the trucks pull up and there's people that just have piled it higher than is allowed. And we do get, I don't like calling them scroungers, but the people that try, the recyclers, scavengers, yeah. You know, it helps out ES if they come along and pick things up and recycle it. I think in those terms, it's a benefit. Sometimes we end up with messes, so you can put your nice little B&B pile out and scavengers will come along and make a mess. So there's pros and cons.
It goes from one neighborhood to another.
Yes, yes. Always a problem with people putting out their B&B items too soon, you know, and so you end up looking at sofas and all sorts of brush and everything out at the curb too early. So it certainly isn't a good look for the neighborhood. And ironically, you know, once people start putting it out early, everybody else thinks, oh, it's time to put it out. So they add to the mess. And it'd be nice to make sure we get that information out. And I know a lot of the neighborhoods have newsletters that go over that, tell people, you know, don't put it out too soon. And hopefully that will reach some people. Let's see, early curb. I think I covered it. Anyone else that was in the, we were the number one group.
Yeah, I think you hit all of those, Chris. And the other thing that we talked about, that our group talked about, was the pay as you go. And, you know, I thought that was a really good, you know, thing, because there's some of us who, you know, by changing the dollar amount of the cans, if you're still picking it up, you're still incurring the cost. And even if you're not picking up, you still got to drive by my house. So if you just charge for each pickup, you know, that might be a way. But one of the challenges is if you have a family of six, you need a big can and you're picking up weekly. So it could be a hindrance to that homeowner.
Well, we were talking about equity too.
Right.
So, you know, there's quite a lot of extended families now since, you know, housing is such an issue. Yes. Fred, well, do you have something to say?
I want to say something too, because like in my neighborhood, there's four families for one can because we have it in the alley.
Oh, yeah.
And so how are you going to determine if somebody did that or not? How much did they use? How much did they put in that one container? That would be kind of difficult to determine. Well,
there wouldn't be a discount then for those big alleyway containers, Carlos? No.
So the idea with that is that most likely, and that's what I think we've got to be careful about, because there's going to be some areas that we don't have the ability to provide curbside service. Okay, and so we would still have to still keep alley service. And a lot of people say, well, let's just eliminate alley service and let's just go and provide curbside service. And then each resident has the ability to choose what size containers they have. But there's going to be areas that we won't be able to provide that service. The only service available is through the alley. And then the other complexity to that is when when brush and bulky materials are placed, we ask the public in general, put it where you basically put your garbage. And so, and a lot of folks are like it in the alley because then you don't see it, you don't get to see it. So if we go out there and move forward towards curbside, we're, again, to stay consistent, most likely we're gonna ask residents to put it in the front yard. And that's what is gonna create some commotion in there because a lot of folks don't wanna see it in the front. Okay, but how do we communicate to one sector of the city this way and then make a distinction somewhere else? So I think we gotta provide some consistency, but also we gotta be aware that physically we may not be able to transition from alley to curbside or vice versa. So yeah, those discounts will have to be, what we need to be considered because in some areas it may apply, some areas it may not apply.
Okay, so it's not an option for everybody. So, anything else from group one? Okay, let's move on. I didn't know what you guys talked about in group two, Margo. Are you the only one?
Trevor, you were there too, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah, Trevor, okay.
And Fred, did you want to add? Okay.
No, so, I was in that group too.
You were in group two. Yeah. So the one that I really focused on to me was the most eye-opening was the discussion of the organic food waste. So one thing that Trevor said just still chills me, which is about the community partners at the university that they have not been able to find anybody who will work with them to pick up all the stuff that the students leave out of the dorms when they leave town. And that, you know, we thought it would be great for Salvation Army or for Goodwill, or I still don't understand why Goodwill won't take it because they are training people who would do the sorting. Obviously the sorting is a big job of it because people just toss everything in. But I know that there was a period when Goodwill had a sweetheart deal with the city.
Yeah.
They were not charged at all for anything that was sent to the landfill. And when that was kind of discovered, they sort of started charging them again. And that really changed their calculation of how they accepted materials because there is waste, things that they can't use. And so they became more selective in what they took. And I was thinking if that was something where we really wanted to partner, because I thought from what I remember reading about the university and seeing it as a faculty member, people leaving. I mean, there are laptops as well as clothes, as well as refrigerators, little refrigerators, as well as, you know, bedding. I just, you know,
didn't they used to have like a sale where you could come in and
charge?
Yeah.
And I think pre-COVID things were a little bit better, but the world has changed in a lot of different ways. Salvation Army doesn't have the same logistical infrastructure for transporting goods and the same number of people down here to be able to do something like campus move out. It's a whole lot of things within that. A few years ago, we did try to transition to taking things a little bit more internally, and we created a program called Dodge the Dumpster, hired on some student employees to do direct intervention before things ended up in a roll-off and diverted anything that could be cleaned up, fixed, whatever, and then put into what was called the Wildcat Rummage Sale, which happened down at the 34th Street Warehouse. And that was directed toward the Tucson community primarily. It would happen before classes started and before move-in of the next year. And stuff was priced to move. I think the last year that we did it really intensely, I think we sold out on the first day. And because things were priced to move, it wasn't super financially sustainable, but the biggest component that really fed into us shifting how we were approaching those things was the human capital component, the number of people required on the university side to do that direct intervention, to do that at the end of the school year when everything else is happening with graduation, with of course, students also just physically moving out of the dorms, just lots of other things going on. We just couldn't make it work at the time. It's something that we're still looking at. We sort of did this mini pilot thing to do an adopt-a-dorm and to try to encourage other organizations to come in. So I think we had, it was Suburban Miners who did a good chunk of the campus this year, and it seems like things went relatively well. The diversion numbers were still under 100,000, under 100,000 pounds diverted. Several hundred thousand pounds still went to landfills, so it's not a great, it's not fantastic. Every little bit helps, but there's still a lot to be desired in terms of making that more efficient. And then, of course, that doesn't touch everything off campus that surrounds the campus and all the neighborhoods, that we still see all of that material going into alleys, regardless of when brush and bulky happens.
Did you think of using like high school students? I was thinking, you know, switching slightly the age group, you know, getting some of the high school ecology clubs, or, you know, we just heard about, Steve talked about going and speaking to these groups who are now collecting plastics. But I can imagine, because it's a short time period, it's like a week or 10 days, isn't it, where you're really mm-hmm. focused on this, that there might be another group. Anyway, I was really saddened to hear their experience, because the stuff that's thrown away is amazing, you know, and explains in part why college is so expensive.
Well, a lot of it's still good. So.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like brand new, really.
Right. And the fact that it was things that could be repaired were part of that. You know, there's also a whole other component to that. Well, anyway, I was just really chilled by that story, and I'm just very saddened. And I think we need to focus on what perhaps we can do. We have Master Recyclers as a city program. Maybe some of them could spend some of their time doing that. I mean, let's put it on our agenda to talk more about it. Fred, did you want to say what you were taken by?
Well, I agree with you. I think the problem with the university is kind of something I experienced once when I was working for the paper, because I saw the program, and I was just astonished as to the, not just the, just the number, but the quality of the the items that were for sale. It was the vast number of all these different things, and a lot of them were very good shape. It occurred to me that there's got to be a better way to figure out how to, listening to the problem that the university has now, we have to come up with a solution for that, because that was something I completely forgot about. And even though it only happens once a year, it's an astonishing amount of material that's going to go into the waste, into the landfill there.
Yeah.
We have the potential of doing something about.
Maybe it's to price things slightly higher to make a little more money. I just know from our church rummage sale, the first people there are all the people, secondhand stores from Mexico, who come and just really clean things out. So I just think you'll never have any problem clearing out what people bring, by and large, especially the high quality at the university. I can't say that for
It would be a way to do it would be to make it more of a known that this is a problem with these departing students, and I'm sure there may be some sort of entrepreneurial opportunity here that we just don't see it yet. Or maybe something has to be created in order to do that, to help alleviate that problem.
Yeah, and we're still having conversations with our surplus department, and we're also having more conversations with our campus pantry, campus closet, which is a relatively new organization on campus, and our basic needs center, to also look at, if nothing else, can we start to divert some of the things that are still usable to those organizations to benefit students? regardless of those organizations, there is so much stuff on this campus that we could very easily satiate any needs that they have and very, very quickly start getting into community needs.
Okay. Well, all right, let's bring it back as a conversation because it obviously is one that takes much more. The other one that in the few minutes that are left was that I felt from the result of it was that the biggest hope or the biggest place where it seemed like there were opportunities to move towards zero waste was really the organic food waste, which yes. I would not have guessed would be the place that we would go in. And I'm still thinking about the chemistry of some of it, and I'm sure not quite sure, but that we really, we talked about, of course, the barriers of the smell and how often it has to be collected, but that here is this large source of material, which creates methane gas when it goes into the landfill, because it goes into to anaerobic digestion. Composting is keeps it out in the open, so you're not having quite the same effect. But you know, what can we do, and how do we structure that program in a way that makes sense? And of course, the opposite of it is what I reported on, is giving people that can have them in their yards or wherever they live these composting tumblers, because that really is quite easy to use. I have a couple of them, and then it also gives a source of what to do once the material is composted, which has been a challenge right now for the department as well. So Trevor, you're with Compost Cats too, so.
Yeah, I would just add that I talked a little bit with one of the facilitators. I can't remember if it was Kate or Andrea. Just that composting is, because of that smell issue, because you also get into just huge volumes, you get into pests, you get into other things. Centralization is definitely something that is really necessary, or a few really central points for collection and then the processing of it, which is a little bit more difficult. The compost facility out at Los Reales is, of course, the direction that we've gone with the city of Tucson, but one of the other topics that we talked about was the reuse store and how a centralized and really importantly decentralized model for getting reusable items out to the community is important, but compost sort of has to have some level of centralization when you're dealing with those really, really large volumes. You can definitely do it in community gardens, you can do it at your house, but when we're dealing with, you know, 20% of the waste that goes into the landfill each year, those are volumes that have to have a centralized aspect. And that just comes with other sorts of challenges with the equipment needed to process the landscaping waste that goes into things, the quality control, and then of course also finding who's going to take all of that finished compost when it's ready is, you know, we get into those volume things. Parks can only take so much, golf courses can only take so much. Starting to look at partnerships with Department of Transportation or other, you know, areas that could use that compost, farms, will be really important.
I remember when I first was getting started in this business, there was something called mill organite, which was a fertilizer that was sold, and probably none of you remember it that long ago. And I learned later that mill stood for Milwaukee, and organite was the composted materials left over from the sewage treatment plant. And it was a very successful one. So, you know, I always think the city can't get into the business of selling things, but maybe, you know, again, it's a partnership with an entrepreneurial company would start selling it. Because if you go to Home Depot or Lowe's, there's compost there that's coming from somewhere, and it could just as well come from Tucson and cut down on the transportation, which Yolanda is always frequently reminding us of the cost of that in terms of carbon. The
emissions.
Thank you, yes.
And Margo, so, you mentioned a city that uses gunny sacks to collect the, I'm assuming, Trevor, I think it's the same thing as a burlap sack.
Yes, it is.
That's the same thing.
Yes, right.
But maybe that would be something that we could look into.
Yes, this was the city of Palo Alto when it first began its recycling. It had different, they had long gunny sacks, you know, with not like the kind you get in potatoes, but very specific ones, or burlap sacks. And you separated the material and put them in, and then they were picked up. You know, it wasn't automated like we've moved to now. I mean, we've moved away some from that, but it was an interesting process. They do collect the compostables in the city of Palo Alto, and I think we need to look into that too. So anyway, we have a lot of topics. I think there was some interesting discussions, and thank you for inviting us to come to it. Some of it was, we all knew, and
well, yeah, the introduction
frustrated, but
it was a little elementary, but I thought our discussion groups were good. So
and picking up on, I forget, Fred or Trevor, we talked about the decentralization. That was really an interesting story that Kate Bolger told about, that Kevin Dahl just put out a table in front of his house and put
out
that he didn't know what to do with. And people came and picked it up and brought other things and so forth. And soon they had a little recycling, you know, free cycle center, if you will, right there in front of his house. And whether, again, that would be something that people could be encouraged to do. Free cycle is has a lot of interesting things on it. If you get onto it at all, I'm still not quite figure out their system, how you match, but
well, we kind of
know what people want.
We kind of do that right now with books. We have a
free library.
A free library,
and we're actually in our park. We're just getting ready to install a children's library in the children's section of the park. So it's just dedicated just mostly for that. But as far as, I don't think even my wife would let me put anything in the front yard that has to do with.
No, that could be a problem in some neighborhoods. So I don't know if we want to encourage that. Well, I think we need to move on because it's time to go. Quickly, any future agenda items?
So do you want us to work some on, like, I'd really like to work on this problem of the university, to maybe to talk some more, Trevor, in more detail about the end of the school year. Would you like to do it as a whole ESAC, or would you like us, the Waste Diversion Group, to work on it? Maybe, Trevor, why don't you come join our Waste Diversion Group?
I would be happy to. I don't know what it means. Okay. I
appoint him immediately. He will join us.
Okay. I think it would be good to start at that smaller group and get our larger as needed.
Yeah. It's a subcommittee, Trevor, that meets once a month as well. That's that long report that I give. And we work on waste diversion, collections, and education. And then we ended up also with code enforcement because we had people who are interested in that. But so, we kind of get in down into the real weeds of things and discuss it in detail. So.
Okay. Anyone else for future agenda? All right.
Well, the other, okay.
What?
Well, it's more for us, for waste diversion.
Yeah.
So on a zero waste definition. In some of the reports that HDR has put out, they've got a bunch of definitions.
Yeah.
City hasn't decided.
There are a lot. Yeah.
We could craft one and move it forward.
Okay, well, let's quickly move to call to audience. I don't think we have anybody left. So let's jump on to item 11, adjournment, 5:36. So we didn't go over too much, but it was a good discussion day. I learned a lot. So
yep.
Thanks, everyone. All right, have a good night.
Right. See you later.
Have a good night, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.